welcome back this 12th day of June 2012. And we've got a very big show lined up today. We've got so much stuff, I don't know how we're going to get through it. But we start off by mentioning that this week is, in fact, Men's Health Week from June 11 to June 17. And we've got two shows dedicated to Men's Health Week. So that'll be this week and next week. Now, before we get on to mention who we've got on the program today, I should give a mention of our dedicated panel operator. Bob Brown has stepped into the chair again this week. We don't know when we'll be seeing Ian Purdy back in the chair, but in the meantime, a big thank you to Bob for once again helping out with the panel and no doubt giving me the benefit of his opinion on a number of our men's type issues. So in the show today, we will be speaking to Rob Kosh in Victoria. Rob is a director of Better Men Australia and the president of the Male Health Victoria. And then later we'll be crossing to Greg Milan in the Newcastle area. Greg is director of Men's Health Services, chairman of Men's Health Forum New South Wales, and an author of the book Men's Health and Wellbeing, an A to Z Guide. So we'll be looking forward to speaking to both Rob and Greg during the show. Now, as I mentioned, it is Men's Health Week this week, and Men's Health this week has a theme of environments. There's a big capital M-E-N in the middle of environments. And as part of that, they're looking at the whole environment around men. It's not just whether you're sick or well. There are 14 factors that they list as contributing to a person's health. And these include early childhood, income, employment, food, housing, gender, and race, among others. And of course, becoming a dad is often it's the first time that a man is often forced to engage with the health system. So that makes it a good time for health services to talk to him about his own health. And becoming a dad is an added incentive for maintaining good health so that he can enjoy a long life with his kids. There is a lot of research shown on the benefits of rough play on dads and kids' health, which encourages physical activity, establishment of boundaries, and father-child bonding. So look out for any activities involved with Men's Health Week. There is a display on, I can vouch for this, at the Stanton Library in North Sydney. And there'll be a whole lot of other activities going on. If you want to find out more, you can follow Men's Health Week on Twitter by going to www.twitter.com/MHIRC. And Facebook, you can go to www.facebook.com/MHIRC for all the latest Men's Health Week updates. And if you just go to the Men's Health Week website at www.menshealthweek.org.au, again, you'll get a whole lot of information. Men's Health Week have chosen a song as their theme, which is a song by Pete Murray called Free. So we'll be playing that song a little bit later as well. It's a song that Men's Health Week have described as a song that captures the spirit and vibe of what good health could look like. It's a really good theme song from Pete Murray, who some of you might know was a keen rugby player in his youth before he got to be a singer, and he excelled in athletics and swimming, but his music skills were recognised and he signed a recording contract with Sony in 2003. I think he's also been on Australian Story, so that's one to watch out for, and we'll be playing his new song Free a little bit later in the show. Now, the first item I wanted to mention is from the States, where they are in the process of conducting their fifth annual nationwide Fatherless Day rally. Because in America, this Sunday, June 17, will mark the 40th anniversary of what is legally recognized as Father's Day in the United States. It was actually President Nixon who finally signed the law recognizing the third Sunday in June as the permanent national holiday of Father's Day. But recognizing Father's Day actually goes back a lot further. It goes back to at least 1908, when Grace Golden Clayton was mourning the loss of her father in a mining accident in Fairmont, West Virginia, where 250 other fathers also lost their lives. Then in 1910, Sonora Smart Dodd started what may actually be recognised as the official beginning of the modern Father's Day, when she too recognised her father, William Jackson Smart, who was a Civil War veteran, who single-handedly raised his six children in Spokane, Washington. However, the last 30 years have not been as kind to fathers, and more importantly, their children. It is an unfortunate fact that of the approximately 70 million fathers in the United States, roughly half, or 35 million of these fathers, are divorced. And of those 35 million divorced fathers, as a result of corrupt anti-family court system in the US, approximately 84.4% of these fathers have been relegated to the status of non-custodial parent. So this Friday, the 13th of... with this knowledge, on Friday, the 13th of June 2008, Fathers for Justice in the US kicked off what became the first of what is now recognised as the official nationwide Fatherless Day rallies. Good, fit, willing fathers who know the importance of their role in the raising of their children are uniting nationwide with mothers, grandparents, children and others to bring about awareness of these issues and to demand a change in the manner in which our anti-family courts are currently making their rulings. Does some of that sound familiar to us in Australia? Anyway, that's a movement that's starting in the US. It's around Father's Day, and as some observers might have noticed, it always seems to be about Father's Day that the leaders in both the UK and the US choose to make anti-father statements. Quite strange, but Mr. Cameron and Mr. Obama have both been found making these statements just as you come up to the day when men should be celebrated as fathers. So coming back to Australia, we have a media release from Senator Kim Carr, who is the Minister for Human Services. And this was put out on Friday, the 8th of June, and it is commenting on the support for men after separation during Men's Health Week. Senator Carr said that Men's Health Week, 11 to 17 June, is an ideal time to highlight the support services available for men affected by separation. The Department of Human Services works closely with Men's Line Australia to refer separated parents for help, including counselling. He notes that men are more likely than women to live alone post-separation and are less likely to ask for help. And over the last year, the department has transferred over 3,800 separated parents to support and referral services, including Men's Line Australia. He says, "We want assistance to be available to everyone when they need it." So if Men's Line is a possibility for you, I can give you the number. It's the cost of a local call. It's 1-300-789-978. That's 1-300-789-978, or you can visit mensline.org.au. Keep that in mind as we come up as we go through Men's Health Week. Now, I might just also mention, we gave it a first mention last week, but there is a new Men's Domestic Violence Court Advocacy Service available. This is being offered by Mario Licha, who's a barrister, and the service is dedicated really to domestic violence claims against men who often find they get no support and they find themselves in court not knowing which way to go. So if you would like to find out a bit more about what Mario Licha is offering, there's a men's meeting this week at Fairfield the 27th of June, actually. On the 27th of June, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m, you should go to the corner of Sackville and Delamere Streets, Fairfield. It's opposite the Buddhist temple there. And Mario will be addressing the topic, how to run a defence in AVO cases. And there'll be question and answers on individual cases. So if you want to raise your own particular problems, I'm sure Mario would be very happy to help you. And if you want to get some more information also, you can go to their website, which is www.guiltynotguilty.org.au. So you can get some more information or go to that meeting. It would be the primary way to get some more information on this. Go to corner of Sackville and Delamere Streets, Fairfield, on the 27th of June at 7 p.m. Yeah, so just to make a booking, just repeating that the website or the to go is info@guiltynotguilty.com.au. I think I might have had that that address wrong the first time. Once again, info@guiltynotguilty.com.au for Mario Leacher. Okay, we might go to a short break and we'll come back with a few more important news items.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
Had a friend, Louis Brown. He was a deacon, just as wise as he could be. Now you realize he could read the good book back from Revelation down to Genesis. You know, last Sunday morning, he was over to the church. My buddy wants to take a Mustang. And he looks out upon the whole congregation, the good book in his hand. Now he casts his eye about, and then he looks over in the amen corner. All the sisters commence to shout.
What'd he say?
He said, a married man's a fool to think that his wife loves nobody else but him. Book, chapter 21. Every married woman got to have a little fun. Read on over. Chapter 22. It's a sin to let that woman make a fool out of you. Now you read a little further. Chapter 23. She two-time you, brother, like she double-crossed me. Read on back over chapter 10. Shimmy one time, she got the Bible again. Cause a man never fool to think that his wife loved nobody. Married women's law is hard to engage. Read kind of careful, chapter 26. Back door slamming, you got to learn to get it fixed. Read on out, chapter 28. Who's that backsliding out through your back gate? I believe I close on chapter 29.
Woman get tired of the same man all the time.
Cause a
man's a fool, think that his wife love nobody else but him. I mean, love nobody else but him.
Day of June 2012, the first of our specials on Men's Health Week, and just running through some of the news items that have caught our eye. I suppose we mentioned it briefly last week, but we have a particular concern about these recent amendments that went through. The government has now legislated, the law is now in place as of 7th of June, and these have made some important changes to domestic violence legislation in the family law, not in the criminal law, which is where you would think it should be. Now, Lillian Roxon's the Rock writer. Nicola Roxon is our Attorney General, And Nicola Roxon has written to the Sydney Morning Herald under an article headed "Protecting Our Children Will Always Be at the Heart of Family Law," which is a nice sentiment, but her article makes a number of very strange and offensive comments. She says that talking about violence against children being damaging, she says some go on to abuse substances such as alcohol. And you've got to ask, yes, what about single parent families? There's not as much research done in the area that she's talking about. In fact, it'd be very difficult to demonstrate any children that have suffered as a result of a family court acting in this area in domestic violence. But the certainly one-parent families, which the family court has made a specialty of creating, has demonstrated to have enormous influence on children in the area of alcohol abuse, in the area of delinquency generally, but that doesn't seem to figure in her calculations. She says the government has changed Australia's family laws to help the court to do more to protect children who are exposed to family violence. Now, this starts off by the court asking the parties whether there has been any domestic violence. Now, this sort of question is a leading question. It supports the answer, really, that the people are looking for. It's a very similar question to when did you stop beating your wife? So that's now going to be asked in the courtroom. And when you look at the definition of domestic violence now, which is so broad, it it includes not only physical assault, but also harassment, emotional manipulation, financial abuse. You know, if you don't let the partner buy a new car, that could be regarded as financial abuse. And threatening behaviour, and not only to the partner or the children, it could be to the family pet. So if you have a bad day and kick the dog or kick the cat, that could all be recorded and reported in court as being domestic violence. This is the court trying, the government trying to interfere in domestic relations, and with no research, little to recommend such a drastic change. And the question is always asked: why would this be done in the family court when you don't have the expertise? Why wouldn't you leave it in the criminal court if these things are alleged, and that's where it's been done forever, and that's where it should always be done? Furthermore, they've got rid of the friendly parent provisions from the 2006 reforms, which is where parents were actually, if they didn't follow the court orders, they were deemed to be not friendly, and this was then brought up against them. Well, this is now, that's been removed, so there's less incentive for a parent to follow the court orders. And, of course, the family court does not enforce its own orders anyway. So, really, what's in it for a parent to follow the orders? Nicola Roxon says in her letter, "It will remain a criminal offence to make false allegations of violence during court proceedings." Really? I'd be very interested to know a single case where that has been the case. There are certainly no perjury cases that have ever been found in the family court. So I don't know what she's really referring to there, where she says it's remain a criminal offence to make false allegations of violence. I'd like to see just one. Anyway, that's something we're going to have to live with. We'll have to see how the family court interprets this new power. There's always the hope that the lower courts might say we won't use that legislation until it's been interpreted by the full family court. So that's also a possibility. Now, on the 21st of May 2012, Andrew Wilkie, the independent member for Denison, made a speech in Parliament requesting a comprehensive review of family law and the child support system. He says that in the 21 months or so that he has been a member of Parliament, he's had a steady stream of angry and exhausted people telling him what they think of family law and child support. Now, this is not surprising. I've heard from a number of MPs that the main number of complaints and questions they get relate to family law and child support because it is such a mess. Andrew Wilkie says that he's concerned because because a number of mothers have complained about child support, which is really a bit surprising, because in the sense that the child support agency is hell bent on pursuing fathers for money paid to the mother. So what is going wrong? The what needs to be considered with the child support payments is that you've got to look at the number of fathers who are unemployed, because following the breakdown of the marriage, I mean, there are all sorts of things that happen. There's an emotional toll. The man is no longer feels like working overtime if he's going to be judged on that overtime just to hand money over to the mother when he doesn't see the children. There are numerous other actions by the child support agency which could only be classed as immoral. But he doesn't seem to be, Andrew Wilkie doesn't seem to be concerned with that aspect of it. He's more in for sympathising with the mothers who want more money to be extracted from the fathers. There doesn't seem to be any suggestion that the mothers might actually go out and work and do something to help with in this area. But he wants the fathers to pay more money. And in the family court, he does mention men in... But his one particular man told him he went so far as to consider murdering the family court judge who decided his case, and that the police had taken action against him for threatening behaviour. Yes, it's such an emotional area. When judges treat the fathers like dirt, I think something like that's to be expected, not condoned, of course. But there's something seriously wrong with our whole family court system and our child support system. And I suppose what would fix, to a large degree, both these areas would be if we had a presumption of equal shared time. Then when there are these difficult cases, they can go to court and you'd have to argue why it should not be equal shared time. And similarly, this would then would do a lot to solve the child support issues if the parent, if the fathers were getting equal shared time. They would be much happier, I'm sure, handing over some money to the mother. But then again, if it's equal shared time, there might often be situations where the mother would be handing over money to the father, or there may be no money payment at all, because parents could support the children when they were with that particular parent. But I would suggest to Andrew Wilkie that if this review goes ahead, that he should be looking along those lines rather than the old familiar bash dad in the family court and then bash him again in child support. Now, just also on that topic, I note that I've had an email from the non-custodial parents party, and in this it's been brought to my attention that there was recently an interview by the non-custodial parents party's media spokesman Eric Greening, and he did an interview with Ross Greenwood on Sydney's 2GB. This is where Eric noted that while non-custodial parents may have the kids up to 35% of the time, they do not get family payments, whereas previously they would have. So this means that all the generous payments from the government to do with the carbon tax will not be going to any of those non-custodial parents. The custodial parents will receive 100% of any one-off payments from the federal government. So once again, this is a financial hurdle for the non-custodial dads. If you want some more information on that, you could go to the non-custodial parents party's website, which is ncpp01@yahoo.com.au. And I'll say a big cheerio to our mate John Flanagan, who's a stalwart of that party. Now, there was a very strange article in the paper this week. It was in the Telegraph. It was front page in the Telegraph, and it related to Federal Magistrate Altobelli, who has removed the father from the children. Not so unusual, you might say. But in this case, the judge has not only been convinced that the that there was no that the grounds for removing him were not there. I mean, the mother claimed that the father had abused the children. The magistrate said that he was satisfied that that did not occur, so the mother was lying. And also, I mean, I personally think that anyone who makes a false allegation of sexual abuse of their own child, with all that incurs and all that entails, going through the whole court process and all the rest of it, I think that is one of the most heinous things that anyone could do. Nevertheless, this mother did that. She put her child, or her children, put her daughter through this whole trial of saying that the father had sexually abused her. And her grounds for saying this were that she'd reached this decision after her own mother had seen a clairvoyant who had predicted the abuse. Now, this is serious. The grandmother had been to a clairvoyant. She told the daughter, her daughter, and then the mother said that as a result of this prediction from the clairvoyant, that she became convinced that there had been sexual abuse. The judge threw it out, but nevertheless not only awarded custody to the mother who had made this false allegation, he gave her sole custody, with the father limited to writing letters and sending gifts to the children. They were an 11-year-old boy and a 6-year-old girl. So, having taken this draconian action, the federal magistrate, Tom Altobelli, must have felt some sort of guilt for what he'd done, so he decided to write a letter, which was a letter for the children to open on their 14th birthday. So the 11-year-old boy will get to open it in 3 years' time, the 6-year-old girl will get to open it in 8 years' time. And in that, he said it was a very tough decision for him, a really tough decision for Tom Altobelli. But in this case, he said, the mum believed in her heart that your dad had hurt you. My job is to look at the information, listen carefully to what everyone says, and I decided that you had not been hurt by your dad. But even after I told your mum what I decided, she still believed in her heart that your dad had hurt you. So what did he do? He denied the father all contact with the children. Quite extraordinary. The only good thing that comes out of this is that one magistrate appears to be accepting some responsibility for these dreadful decisions that the courts make in family law. So, because normally I've heard a judge say in court, you know, I'll make the law, I'll never hear from you again, I never want to hear from you again, off you go, live your life, you mother with the child, father, no children. So Tom Altobelli, I suppose, has seen that. He's decided to write a letter. That's a first, but it doesn't excuse the dreadful decision he made. Now, look, just quickly, Men's Health Week, I do commend to you the Fatherhood Foundation, our friend Warwick Marsh. If you'd like to go to the Dads for Kids website, Dads4Kids, you can get some information on the newsletter. There's a wealth of information there about Men's Health Week and about what's happening in this week, and also for fathers. So, look, that's about all the time we've got for news this week. We might go to a short break and we'll be back shortly with our first guest.
Your local station, 89.3 2GLF.
Even if everything is falling down, but don't lose that vision, and don't lose your courage until you are standing right here with me now. I want you to stand up and fight every moment with me for the truth. It's your love. Tell me, fade. Where is that needle or that damaging blade that's cutting you off until it empties your gaze?
Try, I can never win.
Hello.
Hello.
Rob, good morning. Oh, I can't believe it. We've had all sorts of dramas this morning. Rob Kosh, founding director of Better Men Australia and president of Male Health Victoria, one of the partners of Men's Health Week. Rob, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Good to hear from you, and good morning to everyone throughout Australia on International Men's Health Week.
Thank you, and thank you for your patience as we're trying to get through to you. Now, Rob, we're going to talk about Men's Health Victoria, which is Male Health Victoria, which has recently been incorporated, and it's, as I understand, it's an incorporated statewide professional network and peak body aimed at improving the health and wellbeing outcomes of men and boys.
That's correct.
So, what do you see as your vision for Men's Health Victoria? I'll keep calling it Men's Health. It's Male Health Victoria.
Yes, well, we originally did have it as Men's Health Victoria, but then we came into line with the terminology used by the federal male health policy and others also, basically to remind us all that we are targeting boys as well as men, and often with men's health, what conjures up in the mind for many people is older men and prostate cancer and things like that. But we believe strongly that we need to really be targeting the earlier decades of life and bring men on board. Basically, I guess the strategy is twofold, Bill, and that is firstly, we need to help services become more male-friendly and, I guess, improve the access, particularly in country areas. Throughout Australia, it's quite difficult for men and boys to engage services. It's a lot fewer than in the capital cities. So that's improving from the institution's point of view. But then we also need to be helping men and boys to develop, I guess, a mind shift in and attitudes in engaging services, so that they will take them up more readily, and hopefully prevent a whole lot of serious outcomes that they're only going to regret later in life.
Yes, because there is a reluctance, I suppose, of men, just looking at men for a minute before we talk about the boys, but I think you're also involved with Men's Sheds, and they have that that saying, it's shoulder to shoulder, not face to face, because perhaps men don't like confronting these type of health issues, and you've got to perhaps get there through a different route. And I know you've got a number of programs. I'm just looking at one here, Pit Stop, which seems that's an excellent a way to approach men, I would think.
Well, there are two kinds of pit stops in this field. One is a men's health screening tool that was developed in Western Australia. Around about the same time I developed a Pit Stop men's parenting course back in 2002, that kind of region. And so they are quite different. My particular course is taking off in places around Victoria over these last 10 years. And it's an 8-week course that basically helps dads to rethink the whole issue of parenting and what their role is and how to do that better. So that's just one of the many programs where I'm just finding that men are starting to flock to. I mean, we have 20, 30, even 40 men coming to those courses for 8 weeks on a cold winter's night, and we've got a 92% retention rate. So guys are obviously wanting this kind of thing, and they're taking it up. So I really believe in that statement from Field of Dreams movie with Kevin Costner. Yes. If you build it, they will come.
Yes.
And we've seen that. You put on programs, you anticipate what men are wanting, because often men don't really know what the options might be. And sure enough, they're coming out.
Yes. Now, these are, they're in an evening course. So is it 7:30 to 9:30?
That's correct, yeah.
And so these are the Pit Stop parenting course. Now, you've got various options for men, I see, and perhaps you might just run through a few of those that you're also associated with.
Yes. Well, I work for Greater Dandenong Community Health Service as well, which is the parent body is Southern Health, the largest health provider in Victoria, several hospitals and community health centres. I'm based in Springvale, which is a very multicultural area, so we're trying new things to reach out to refugee dads and men in general, and that's a whole new challenge. You know, I've been kicking goals with your average Aussie Anglo guy and bloking it up, but it's a whole different kettle of fish with refugee dads. So we take refugee dads and their kids out just for a day out, bushwalking or to the pool or for a tour of the city. We do antenatal courses for various cultural groups like Cambodians and Vietnamese, where we have a couple of sessions where we deal directly with the dads-to-be from those cultures. And we find that's a great strategy because that's when the window of opportunity is widest for men seeking help at the birth of their first child. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of initiatives we're trialling, and we're seeing some good things happen.
Do you find from some of these Asian cultures that the dads have some unusual cultures around the antenatal classes?
Well, predominantly, they're not as involved in the birth of their child and the early years as some of the other cultures around. But they come to Australia, and the majority of these fellas want to do it the Australian way. Now, identifying the Australian way is not easy either, because there's still such variety, and there's a lot of guys still in the old school thinking that these services are basically for the women. But we're turning that around, so we'll just keep plugging away until they get that message.
And do you have sessions for Indigenous people as well?
Not primarily targeting Indigenous, but they tend to fit in quite well with the more blokey-oriented kind of programs that we have. There are some specialist services that we are, I guess, encouraging to join Male Health Victoria so we can get behind what they're doing and promote their services more.
Well, you have a varied background, Rob. I think you were originally working on Chinook helicopters.
That's right. So, first 6 years of my life were, working life was in the Royal Australian Air Force as an airframe fitter. So Chinook helicopters and then Mirage fighters, which was a wonderful 6 years and gave me a good grounding in working as a tradie. So, yeah.
And working with a group of blokey men, I suspect, which you can draw on later on.
Absolutely, yes, yes. And, you know, I'm a very hands-on kind of guy. I do a lot of DIY stuff, so I'm very much in that vein as a sort of closet blue collar worker, if you like. Now, but most of my work now is working in the health and parenting sector.
Yes, because well, the next strand in your makeup was actually going to the monastery for a while, I think, too, wasn't it?
That's my nickname for it. Yes, I went to theological seminary for 7 years and was a Baptist minister ordained in Queensland for about 15 years. And that was a really good grounding too, because the kind of training we received in that system was very comprehensive and included psychology and educational methodology, sociology, anthropology, as well as your theological perspectives. So, and working with families, there's a lot of transferable principles there. And so when I left the ministry in the year 2000, I was able to slot into a secular-based, government-funded family services agency, and was able to make the switch pretty effortlessly.
Yes, it's an unusual and a very it's a great background for all the work you're doing now. And as you said, it's with I guess mainly with Greater Dandenong. Now, I'm just looking at some of these other options you have. You've got an evening pool night. How does that work?
We need to realise that some men are just not going to sign up for an 8-week course on parenting, so we need to give them a soft entry point into the program so that we can just make a connection and build a rapport, and then after that we can perhaps sign them up. So a once-a-month pool night just for any dad who wants to show up, and we, you know, have an optional meal to begin with. And that's an easy way into it, and then relationships can start to build. But it's also an opportunity where we can reconnect with the dads that have been in our program, so that there's some ongoing kind of support, and we can keep them abreast of developments. And and provide an opportunity for those guys to start inputting into other guys' lives. So there's a real peer support dimension that takes over.
Yes, and the last time we actually spoke on this program was back in July 2010, when we had a Dads in Distress special. I suppose the evening pool nights is, I suppose it sits alongside the people who are in really desperate straits, or it perhaps prevents them getting to there where they're going to need Dads in Distress type help.
Well, that's true. I mean, we have some great support groups down here in Victoria and right across Australia. I consulted Dads in Distress to help them in their endeavour to become more recognised as a mainstream agency and a lot more child-focused. And they're on their way now. They're doing a great job. And the likes of Barry and Dean, Mason, Lawrence Anson, Phil York, all these guys are doing a marvellous job. But they realise, and we realise, that no one agency, no one group can meet all the needs of every man. And we need to work collaboratively and feed into each other's programs, etc. So yes, certainly that's where we can come in and make a difference, fill that gap, and provide a bit of social outlet for a guy who's separated. A lot of people don't realise that quite often when the marriage breaks up, he feels quite isolated. A lot of the friends back away, and he's really needing some of that social support. So that's where programs like this can help him.
Yes, I guess that's one important, and the other important part is, which we mentioned a little bit earlier, is working with the younger men, the boys, to get in early and hopefully get them on the right track. So what do you offer for the boys?
Well, firstly, what we offer is hopefully a better dad. After he's done the course, he's the one that can engage with his own son in a way that perhaps is the most meaningful to that boy. Always the danger in running youthful programs and whatnot is that the youth worker becomes the legend in the child's eyes and creates even a further divide between he and his father, whose father just doesn't seem to be able to measure up to that kind of approach. So really, it's about getting alongside the existing carer, and that's usually the biological dad or the stepdad or the granddad, and he becomes the legend in the child's eyes and can do a lot more than we could ever do in any small program that we run. But look, there are initiatives that we need to get onto, and it's only early days for Male Health Victoria, but we are keen to have educators involved. The whole Boys in Schools initiative that's been around for some years, tapping into that and making the most of the opportunities there are to see boys in their own schooling have teaching and learning opportunities that are more catered for boys with their interactive and activity-based kind of learning.
Yes, and I guess mentoring would play a role in dealing with the boys.
Well, look, mentoring is fantastic, and even a boy that has a great dad can benefit from having healthy relationships and exposure to other mentors that can provide a different perspective perhaps, or confirm what Dad is on about. The important thing is in any mentoring program is though that the parents are not replaced in the whole scheme of things for that child, mm-hmm. but their role is respected and even magnified through that mentoring relationship.
And we're speaking with Rob Kosh, founding director of Better Men Australia and president of Male Health Victoria. Now, your own program is the Better Men Australia, I think, is it?
That's right. I have three hats. Working for Southern Health at the Community Health Centre at Springvale, and also part of that role, I guess, is being president of Male Health Victoria. But the third hat that I wear is my own consultancy business in men's work, which involves consultancy to local governments, to agencies, in helping them to become more father friendly. It's speaking at conferences and breakfasts and the like. It's taking men on adventures, which I really love to do. Mm-hmm. My particular passion is kayaking, so it's nothing better than getting a bunch of guys away for a kayaking weekend, and the mentoring takes place there informally and in a very, I guess, mutually empowering way, where all the guys can have input into everyone's life. And I think that's one of the things that's really missing today. Men are so focused on just making ends meet that we have very little time for our own recreational needs. But it's vital, Bill. If men don't get the chance to get away and process what's happening for them and come back better men, if they don't do that, then the kids never see them doing anything that lights them up. And it looks like Dad's just so super serious. He's always on a treadmill. And the only engagement is kind of housekeeping and correcting and disciplining, and no kid wants to grow up in that kind of environment.
That all sounds eminently sensible. So, Rob, if people want to find out a bit more about these adventures and all these other things we've been talking about, what's the best website for them to go to?
www.bettermen.com.au.
Okay, www.bettermen, that's one word, .com.au.
That's right.
And you can get in touch with Rob and find out all these wonderful activities. Now, Rob, we're getting to the end of the time, but I asked you if you'd like to pick a song. Perhaps you could tell us what you've picked and any reason for picking it.
There are so many great songs out there, Bill. This was the hardest job I've had this week to pick that song. But I've gone with Robbie Williams' song, Better Man, and I guess that connection is obvious with Better Man Australia. But the line in there, Lord, I'm doing all I can to be a better man. And what he's picking up there is basically a whole new trend, a sociological shift that's been happening amongst men, particularly in the Western world, where they want to be more hands-on, more switched on, more tuned in to their kids, and to work on improving their own situation, to do better than their dads did with them. And so Better Men is all about supporting men who want to pursue that particular personal development track for the sake of their kids. So Robbie Williams, Better Man.
That's great, and we wish you all the best for the inspiring work you're doing, Rob, and thank you very much for being on the program this morning and telling us some of those exciting things you're working in. And with that, thank you. We'll go to Robbie Williams.
My pleasure, Bill.
Thank you.
Tell someone to love me, I need to rest in arms. Keep me safe from harm and pouring rain. Give me endless summer, Lord, I feel the cold.
cold. Feel I'm getting old before my time. As my soul heals the shame, I will grow through this pain. Lord, I'm doing all I can to be a better man. Go easy on my conscience, 'cause it's not my fault. I know I've been taught to take the blame. Rest assured, my angels will catch my tears, walk me out of here. I'm in pain as my soul heals the shame. I will grow through this pain. Lord, I'm doing all I can to be a better man. Someone to love me, I need to rest in arms. Keep me safe from harm and pouring rain. Give me endless summer, Lord, I feel the cold. Feel I'm getting old before my time. As my soul heals the shame, I will grow through this pain. Lord, I'm doing all I can to be a better man.
And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, and our next guest this morning is Greg Milan. Greg is a Director of Men's Health Services and Chairman of the newly formed Men's Health Forum for New South Wales. He's one of Australia's leading experts on men's health and well-being, with over 23 years' experience in the men's health promotion area. Greg, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Well, thank you. Oh, it's good to hear your voice. We've had some technical problems this morning, but anyway, we're ploughing on. It's great to hear you.
Okay.
So, Greg, you're the Men's Health Forum New South Wales has launched fairly recently. I think just December last year.
Yes, that's right. On December the 2nd last year, we launched the Men's Health Forum of New South Wales. With the intention of it being the peak body to improve health, relationships and well-being of men and boys in New South Wales. It's funny, really, in a way. I've been in this business a long time, and I'm on the national executive of the Australasian Men's Health Forum. That's the peak body for improving male health right across Australia. They're the national body, and they're the ones that do the national men's health conferences every 2 years.
Yeah.
But we haven't had a state body in New South Wales. We've had state bodies in Queensland, Tasmania and WA. And I know you've just had my colleague Rob on, and recently Victoria started last year to set up its group down there. But we've never really had a state peak body in New South Wales, so we thought it was more than about time to do that.
Mm. And so what are the aims of this new forum?
Well, we brought people together at that initial launch meeting. We had about 50 people from organisations and services and individuals across New South Wales who attended. And what we did there was really define our terms of reference and our purpose and our principles and all of that kind of stuff. So Basically, the forum's open to men and women who are involved in improving the health relationships and well-being of men and boys in New South Wales. And by relationships, I'll explain what we mean there. By relationships, we mean men and boys' relationships to others, like their mates, friends, partners and families. So it's a very broad understanding of the word relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're doing is not excluding single men, of course. We mean relationships between single men and their mates as well. So we've got kind of a lot of principles, but basically we've worked out our principles and objectives. I guess in some ways we've aligned ourselves to the National Male Health Policy, and we would like to see a lot of men-friendly services. Rob mentioned this too, about men-friendly services in New South Wales, and there's various ways of doing that. But one of the key ways of doing it is to actually train staff. You just can't expect men services in health, welfare and education and the legal system to wake up one morning men-friendly. You've actually got to get in there and do a lot of work, which involves training staff to be more aware of men and changing a whole lot of things. And I think we'll be doing some of that, but some of that work, which is really important. But the other thing we're pretty committed to is working directly with men in the community by running men's health nights and various other programs for men. Mm-hmm. Not all peak organizations, they're all different in different states. And particularly the national body, AMHF, that I mentioned, actually doesn't do men's work in its constitution. It's decided that it doesn't do men's work. It takes more an advocacy and lobbying and, you know, increasing knowledge by running the conferences. It does all that. But we decided we really want to do, you know, hands-on men's hands-on work that improves the health and well-being of men and boys in New South Wales. And one of the other things we're very, very committed to is doing that work in rural and regional locations across New South Wales.
Mm. What do you think is the main barrier to getting men along to health services? Because there does seem to be some sort of reluctance to...
Well, look, I'm going to challenge that thought. I don't believe in that, that the key to this is getting men along to health services. Sorry, I don't agree with that. I think the issue is getting men's health information that men need to men. And a lot of the times that doesn't happen in health services. That happens in places where men naturally congregate. Work, sporting clubs, mosques, churches, pubs. And we've been doing that kind of work in Australia now for nearly 15 or 20 years with fantastic evaluated results that it works. So it's about taking the information that men need to them in places where they naturally are. The National Male Health Policy spells this out really clearly. The trouble with men's health in Australia is that we don't have men-friendly health, welfare, education and community services. They are not men-friendly at all. So the point of trying to get men to go to them is a bit of a waste of time.
Mm.
If, you know, I don't believe in harping at Joe Blow to go to the doctor. If he arrives at the doctor, to be surrounded by screening breast pap smear posters, breast screening posters, and if he's really lucky, he gets to read a two-year-old Women's Weekly. I'm sorry, Bill, but that's what GP practices in this country look like. They're very, very women-friendly. They're not male-friendly at all.
Yes.
So another tack that we take is to do a lot of work with GPs who are very interested in increasing male patients into their surgery. We'd step in and say, well, make your waiting room male-friendly, stock it with male brochures and posters, do some training again in education of staff in GP practices from reception right through to welcome men into a place that's men-friendly.
Changing the hours that the surgery is open might be another basic thing.
Access to services is a huge issue for men in this country.
Mm.
Men work 9 to 5, doctors normally open 9 to 5, and we say, why didn't you go to the doctor? Well, you know, maybe you can't get away from work, or it's difficult to take time off. Up here in the Hunter, where I live in Newcastle, we've had a GP after access service for quite a few years now, open from 5 to 9, and it's not surprising that some of the biggest users of that service are men.
Mm.
It's simple. you know, we've got to change the system in our country to make it more male friendly, and that's what the National Male Health Policy very clearly spells out. And it's interesting for me, as a person who's worked in the industry for a long time, in the middle of Men's Health Week, to see the messages going out about you need to go to the doctor, you need to go to the doctor. Mm. Bit of a waste, that one. Because I'm not sure that that's the answer. You know, that, like I said before, and Rob would know this too, and Rob's doing that work down in Victoria, you need to take health messages out into the community to men. Victoria started all this. Somebody had a brilliant idea in Victoria about, ooh, gee, I won't be accurate on the years if I guess. Say 18 years ago, he said, look, what would happen if we had a doctor, a couple of doctors talking at the pub, and we invited men to come to the pub and have a drink and listen to the doctor?
Mm.
300 men turned up. 300 men listened to the doctor. They went away. They went to the doctor after that talk, after they got the information they needed and had the health checks that the doctor does, and some serious illnesses were picked up. It works. And we've been running men's health nights in this country ever since.
Mm.
It's that simple, really.
It's just a little bit of lateral thinking, isn't it, and really taking note of the what's going on.
Yeah, that's right. You see, already the New South Wales Men's Health Forums, we've been trying, we're going through the process of any new organisation of incorporation and setting up bank accounts and membership, and that can, those administrative things take time to run on. But even though we've been doing that work, we've already run an event in Bathurst with the local area up there. We ran a men's health night with the local prostate cancer support group, and we had a bit of opposition, I think, from another sort of health-related do that was happening in Bathurst that night, but we got over 150 men there and their wives, and we had a good night talking about men's health issues. It's that easy. Mm. And we'll be doing, you know, more things like that.
Is that your, the men's health forum has associated with a lot of other services, aren't you, including the Black Dog Institute? And,
well, they're our membership. We brought the, how we've worked is we brought these people together to the initial meeting. We've written up a kind of report of the meeting that anyone can see what we're doing, and we've circulated that around. So from the 50 or so people who came to the initial meeting, we now have a mailing list of well over 100. Now, those people work in the area of improving male health. You mentioned the Black Dog, yes. Black Dog Institute about depression, yeah, they're there. So they're our, we hope, those people on our mailing list, when we finish all the business side and we incorporate, will become paid members of the Men's Health Forum. So we'll have a membership base. But we've got a membership base of some really talented people in New South Wales doing some great work. And one of our future plans that we're working on now is to run Australia's first men's health, wellbeing and relationships training seminar next year in March in Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a conference. Clearly it's not a conference. It's bringing together people who want training in how to work with various groups of men better. So over 2 days, there'll be a sort of a menu of training opportunities for working with young men, old men, Indigenous men, men in rural locations, if you want to increase your skills in how to work with suicide prevention, for example, or a whole range of men's health promotion health issues. Over 2 days, people can come along to this event and get the training that they need. And it's the first time we've done that in Australia. We've organised national men's health conferences before, and they're really successful and really good. But for a lot of people who worked in the area, they don't like that academic approach of keynote speakers and papers and presentations and all of that. They've always said, can't we have a bit more, you know, grassroots training? So that's what this is. There's 2 days of it on offer in Newcastle. So that's a big event that we're planning for March 14 and 15 next year.
Oh, okay. You've got the dates already. We'll be monitoring that. And
yes,
that sounds
please.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. We're busy, as I said, going through the administrative things, but we have secured the venue in Newcastle for that. And it'll be a statewide training seminar over 2 days.
And before that, you do have a seminar coming up in Perth, I think, don't you?
Perth. I'm just trying to think of what...
Oh, no, sorry, I'm a year out. That was last year, Perth, September 19th.
Yeah, that was the conference last year.
Yes, how did that go?
That was good. That was very good, actually. We had good numbers in Perth. I've been to, just about every one. There was one that I missed in Alice Springs, but I've been to most national men's health conferences. I thought Perth was pretty exciting. We had it launched by Tim Matheson, our current Prime Minister's husband, which was a good way to launch the conference, I thought.
Yes.
And we had a lot of input there from a whole range of people, a lot of Indigenous issues, lots of things about men's sheds. I think it was a really totally successful conference. The conferences are very successful next year, and every 2 years they're on. We had Perth last year, and the next one is on in Brisbane in 2013, which should be great.
Yeah, so that's one we'll put in our diaries as well.
Yep.
Now, Greg, you're the author of the Men's Health and Wellbeing, an A to Z guide that came out in July 2010.
Yeah.
And it's still a Bible, I think, in this area. It's certainly on display up at our local library in Men's Health Week.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, yes. It's, I've had another look at some of the reviews. It's describing as there's a comprehensive look at men's health in the context of men's lives, the physical, emotional, social, psychological, spiritual and cultural environment. So it fits in very well with the theme of men's health, International Men's Health Week this year.
Mm.
Perhaps could you tell us a little bit more about your book?
Well, look, it's been very successful at the moment. There's very few copies. We're sort of doing a reprint as I speak of the book because our first print run has just about run out.
Oh, that's
great
news.
Looking at reprinting the book right at the moment. I think the thing that's unique about this book is a few things. One, at the very beginning, it gives a range of men's health checks from 18 to 80, 90, for as long as you live, really, in each age group, you know, in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. So that's the physical stuff, I guess, we sort of look at that first up. Then the A to Z book itself. Yes, there are chapters in there on gout and arthritis and cancer, which are all very important, but there's also chapters on how to talk to your doctor, domestic violence, fathering, intimacy and sex, massage, meditation, mindfulness, all of those, yoga, all of those different areas that you've covered very well there. It covers the emotional, social, psychological, spiritual even, contexts of health. Because that's what I believe in, and that's the way that I work, and that's the way that a number of my colleagues across Australia work as well. So men's health isn't just defined by physical health. Lots of blokes who, you know, who honestly don't have the full, you know, haven't had a lot of health information given to them in their lives, always have a notion of health as being, you know, gout and arthritis and cancer and things like that, the physical stuff. But, you know, it's not hard to have a talk with them and then, you know, widen that out to the other things that are going on in their life, relationships and money, work. You know, do they work? Do they not work? If you don't work, you've got a different set of health problems sometimes on board from people who do work. People who do work have another lot of health problems as well with stress and work in Australia. We now have the gold award in being the country in the world that works the longest hours, which is creating an enormous amount of problem for both men and women in Australia. So it's the context that men live in, the environment that they live in, all the things that happen around them. They're all factors that affect their health and well-being. And I think the book is good in covering all of those things.
Yes, and if you mentioned relationships, if the relationship busts up with a divorce, that I imagine would have has a severe impact on the health of the male.
Yes, it does. It does. I think relationships are very important. I think there's two factors to that. I think we could do more with talking about relationships in programs that we run with men, like how to improve relationships not only with their partners, which is important, but also with other people like family and friends and things like that. So I think there's a fair bit of work to be done there. The other thing about relationships that split up, I think we've got to remember that, you know, if we looked at 100% of relationships that split up across Australia, most of them, you know, in that phase that people are going through, most people get along just fine in splitting up a relationship, and it's kids that have difficulties with it, but after a time the kids are all right. So for the majority of people, and let's face it, why would you like to spend the rest of your life with someone you don't like? That's stupid. So so splitting up from someone and leading a better life is a good thing. So most relationships in Australia, when two people part, that's good. But having said that, I think there's a thin minority or wedge in there of people, both men and women, who have a dreadful time, who get what I call stuck. And if we're talking about men, men get stuck sometimes after the split up of a relationship when there's issues around their partner. And if there's kids involved, that can all go a bit haywire for a while. But I think we've got to remember that's for the minority, not the majority of men. The majority of men in Australia, when they split up, are okay. But I think you're talking about that minority who aren't okay for a while. And I mean, the services around, like Dads in Distress, who do a great job for men in that stage in their life. I'm calling it a stage in their life because I think they get stuck. I think it's about loss and grief. Obviously it is. They've split up a relationship with someone. They may only see their kids occasionally, not all the time. So there's a lot of loss and grief. But someone has to come and work with that particular guy about working through that to the place where he can move on. And I don't think we do enough work in that area at all. I think that's why I think, you know, there's a lot of pressure and stress on men because we don't provide the right services to men at the right time that they need it, you know, which is around that time when they separate.
Yes, it's interesting you say stuck. I think men can get stuck at different stages. You know, I've heard people saying that men don't get older; they just get taller. You know, it's, sometimes that you seem to get locked in at an earlier stage of development. And I think that's a good point, that after divorce you really need to, you know, despite all the pressure you're under, you still need to be able to move on and still live a good life.
Yes, that's right, and you can. And most of these guys do eventually, but some men will get stuck for 6 months, a year. But I've seen unfortunate cases where they've got stuck for 4 or 5 years. Mm. Now, that's a bit beyond the pale. They needed to have moved on by then, otherwise they're just having a miserable time. I'm not sure I agree with your theory about as we get older we just get taller. I think it's actually the opposite of that anyway.
It's an extreme controversial position. Greg, we're running out of time, unfortunately, but I just wanted to mention again that book, which I think you said is being reprinted at the moment, Men's Health and Wellbeing.
It should be reprinted fairly quickly. We'll have some copies back. Yeah, it's Men's Health and Wellbeing, an A to Z Guide. If anyone wants to know about it, they can just go to my website. You can order off the website. My website is www.menshealthservices, all one word, menshealthservices.com.au.
Great. www.menshealthservices.com.au.
Yep.
And now we come to the hardest part of the show. Greg, I asked you if you'd like to pick a song, and I think this is our first brush with fame in the selection of an item.
Look, I had a dreadful time doing this too, like Rob. I thought, oh, God, what song? And, look, I'm feeling a bit sad about the demise of yet another one of the Bee Gees. I did attend the same high school as the Bee Gees. They were a few years ahead of me because they're older. But we did attend the same high school in Banyo High School up in Brisbane. So I picked a Bee Gees song for this morning. I thought that was appropriate.
Very appropriate, and it is sad. We should mention the passing of Rowan Gibb, and Maurice Gibb predeceased him, so we're down to Barry.
To one, yes.
who I think is doing it well. I know he did it pretty tough after Morris died, so I'm sure he's struggling a bit at the moment. But anyway, look, let's go back to their first big hit in Australia, and you might just...
That was Specs and Specs.
Specs and Specs. Let's go with that. Well, thanks very much, Greg, for being on the show.
Thanks a lot.
Where is the sun that shone on my head? The sun in my life. It is dead. It is dead. Where is the light that would play in my street? And where are the friends I could meet? I could meet. Where are the girls I left far behind? The Specs and the Specs of the girls on my mind. Where is the sun that shone on my head? The sun in my life, it is dead, it is dead. Where are the girls I live far behind? The Specs and the Specs of the girls. The girl that I loved, she is gone, she is gone. All of my life I called yesterday. The Specs and the Specs of my life gone away.
And welcome back to Dad's on the Air for the last time this 12th day of June 2012. We'd like to particularly thank our guests today. We had Rob Kosh, the Director of Better Men Australia and President of Male Health Victoria. And we had Greg Milan, Director of Men's Health Services and Chairman of the Men's Health Forum New South Wales. Next week, we've got our second part of our Men's Health Week special. So we'll be speaking to Professor John McDonald, Director of Men's Health Information and the Resource Centre at the University of Western Sydney and the former President of Australasian Men's Health Forum. And we'll also be speaking with Melissa Abu-Ghazali, Managing Director of Top Blokes Foundation. So we're looking forward to a great show again next week. So in the meantime, don't forget, you can go to our website, which is www.dadsontheair.com.au. where you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. So, make sure you keep up to date with Facebook and Twitter for all the news from Dad's on the Air. So, once again, with thanks to Bob Brown for all his assistance today and all the gang at 2GLF 89.3. This is Bill Cable from Dad's on the Air and signing off until next week. We look forward to seeing you then.